funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, lads, we have to start with the Sligo situation. Unfortunately, they've pulled out of the game at the weekend with Galway. So, like, it's definitely an unfortunate situation. Paul Taylor, he was on local radio and he was saying that the players are very disappointed. He says, we've always acted within the guidelines. We've always done everything that was possible that we possibly could for the health and well-being of the group. That's always been a priority. That has been the priority of my job, to protect the group. Situation here is, Ger, is that they have, I think it's 11 players between positive cases, between isolating, they have injuries, and they say that they can't fulfil the fixture. We suppose we just have to take them at their word on that.
Yeah, like, on one level, you know, if you're inside that Sligo camp, really, you must be frustrated with being put in this position that you have to go and concede a game. But something else that I haven't seen their county board yet, or even someone from Connacht's council coming out looking to see, can the fixture be rearranged? There is enough time there between the All-Ireland semi-finals. We're only at quarter-final stage in Leinster this weekend, so there's definitely enough time there to allow for a game to be moved. And I just would hope that maybe this isn't the end of it, that there is some work being done in the background that will give those Sligo players who would have put in an awful lot of work, of course, during the last couple of years and the last 12 months in particular, that they are given the opportunity to represent their county in championship football, because there's no better feeling.
The only thing on that, Ger, is that, and Fergal McGill was talking about this, and John Horan has said that no postponements will be entertained before All-Ireland semi-final, potentially All-Ireland final stage. And, like, I mean, say you were to put it back to next week, what would happen if Galway, you know, got a few positive cases, or, yeah, you know, Sligo got a few more, and then it was put off the next week? The GAA's stance on this is that if you start doing this, where do you stop?
Where do you stop? And again, from that position, you can obviously appreciate where the GAA come from too. I would look back to Fermanagh's commitment to the league fixture over in Clare, where I think they had in the teens in terms of cases as well. You might correct me on that.
And yeah, 17.
So they managed to get a squad together and go and fulfil the fixture. Now, there's a difference, obviously, between championship and league. But at the same time, they did call upon their under-20s and fellas who did well in the club to go represent the county. And, you know, they showed themselves well in that particular game. So I just don't know, is everything being done that can be done to get this game played? The GAA, I know they've said what they've said, but how many times have they said something and gone and done something else? The GAA, the organisation that it is. But I think if there is an opportunity and scope for the match to be played 1 week later, in the hope that maybe the same doesn't happen to Galway. But again, I fully agree with your point as well. It's a hard situation if the Galway lads end up contracting COVID the following week. Then the same gesture has to be given to them too.
That's the thing, I suppose, Conor. Look, you'd have sympathy for Sligo. There's a part of me just says to Sligo, bring in a few extended panel members, bring in a couple of the under-20s, play the game. You know, like, I mean, there's a panel of 32. We know 11 are gone, and then there's some injuries as well. The numbers, you know, like, I mean, could there be an element of this? Like, I tried to get Paul Taylor on the show. He had a very easy interview yesterday. We're not really getting to the bottom of anything. How many players has he available? Why can't he use under-20s? Is it any harm to go play the game, you know, to go play the game anyways? I don't know. I don't know where to come down on it, whether to give sympathy to Sligo or whether to be critical of them.
Yeah, and I'm the same, Willie, because like there has been different cases in the last number of weeks, and there's been different circumstances. We've come down harder on maybe some counties where we thought there was more wiggle room to fulfil fixtures than others, maybe in Sligo's case. My thing on this is just, and I'm with Ger, is that like, so the fact that John Horan has left some wiggle room for there to be fixtures moved, and I know he's not saying, he's saying that that's not going to happen until the All-Ireland semi-final and the final, but the reality is that this is a Connacht semi-final, so we're only two games away from the All-Ireland semi-final anyway. And this is like, this is a bit different from, let's say, Ger brought up Fermanagh. It's a bit different in that, like, there wasn't any wiggle room there because that was the end of the league, and you're talking about the championship, you know, having to take, and they maybe could have played a win midweek, but the window was a lot tighter. Whereas in this case, the remaining provincial finals, the other three provincial finals aren't until the following weekend anyway. And yeah. I completely get your point there about, like, what if it happened to Galway? But I just think, like, in this case, they could have taken it in isolation and potentially moved it on a week, especially with that three-week window. A three-week window that probably isn't going to be likely, you know, it's not going to be likely in any other province, but because they might not be the following weekend.
That could potentially, Conor, go from the Connacht final being at 1:30 the following week on RTE to not being on television at all. Like, I mean, would you be happy with Galway and Mayo not being on television, for example?
Well, I don't know the schedules. Maybe, Willie, it could be a case like this week, like at the weekend, Mayo Leitrim was on RTE News Now, as long as it was televised to a certain degree. Obviously, I wouldn't be happy with that. Would I be happier with that rather than the game, this game not being played at all? Probably, to be honest. Just under these completely strange circumstances that we're in. It just, as I said, Ger made a good point there about, like, I do feel for the Sligo lads. We don't know the circumstances of how, you know, with injuries and like to what extent that their panel has kind of been decimated. But just to be in a position where, you know, yeah, as you said, you have to take them at their word. To be in a position where they have to withdraw from the championship, I do feel for them. And I would have said that I thought there would have been more of a case to make to have the game pushed back a week.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Taylor says they've acted within the guidelines. Like, they have some close contacts that have to pull out. You'd hope those close contacts were people they lived with and that these fellas weren't driving to training together or anything like that. Because Tomás O'Shea did make the point, Ger, that none of the big counties are having these problems. And you have the likes of Kerry driving, you know, up to Monaghan individually in their cars. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't really drive to training. I'm not saying Sligo were doing that. I'm talking in general here. You cannot drive to training with a couple of your mates and expect everything to be okay, because when the shit hits the fan, the whole car is out.
I'm just trying to, even looking at the national averages, like Sligo as a county nationally,
you're one of the best. No,
they are one of the best. So I'm just thinking, Which fella on the Sligo team went off chasing a woman or something like that and jumped in the car with a few lads? But joking aside, well, that could have been something as simple as that. But, you know, there probably needs to be a bit more communication from the Sligo camp and county board, just to probably clarify a couple of the questions that are out there, because I think nationally, everybody would feel certainly for the players, but then there is a sense of being critical of the Sligo county board, whereby they're not pushing harder to get a game put back. And even if I'm putting myself in the Galway camp, you know, Galway would be looking for a decent game to sharpen the axe a bit if they were to get over Sligo. In terms of playing Mayo in a Connacht final, I think Galway going into a Connacht final against Mayo without getting an opportunity to improve on their two league performances, most recent performances, I think that won't necessarily help Galway's preparation.
No.
Either, you know. I think everybody wants to see the game being played, and I think there could be more that should be done to try and get it over the line. And even, like, I don't know, Woody, whatever, you're coming to the end of your Sligo career, or it could be your first time putting on the Sligo jersey, you've been looking forward to playing championship for your county, and to not have that there now. And I know Sligo's current position in the league and trajectory is obviously different to Galway, and Galway would be heavy favourites going into it. But on any given day, west of Ireland, heavy pitch, you know, you could turn a Division 1 team over, you know?
Well, I think the Fergal McGill was talking about the integrity of the championship, and Tomás O'Shea was calling that into question. And Fergal McGill says, I don't think there's any question about the integrity of the championship. Galway still have to win a provincial title. And I completely agree with that. Like, I mean, let's be honest. I understand what you're saying. They could, you could potentially be turned over, but it's not like Galway are getting a bye against Mayo. Like, Galway are getting a bye in a game to be unbackable favourites to win. So I don't think the integrity of the championship has been called into question. I do think the integrity of the championship will be called into question at some point. But then again, I suppose you look at it, and people always use the example, oh, if Dublin or Kerry had this, would it be changed for them? Dublin or Kerry have enough for two teams. Like, mm-hmm. Dublin or Kerry would field a team, you know, and they'd probably be able to field a very strong team if they had maybe 10 out. It's maybe the weaker counties feel that when they're missing, you know, 10 fellas, that they don't have a chance, you know, and maybe that's something that is happening. I want to move on from that, lads, because yeah, we got some good news yesterday in that the Fixtures Calendar Review Task Force updated the report, and they have decided to include a split season. So this was something they disagreed with when they released their first report, and now they're all for it. I suppose they saw how it worked and how great it was to have uninterrupted club season, you know, and not just pushed into April in between inter-county season, just run it off by itself. Another two bits and pieces was that there'd be the early season competitions will be gone. There'd be no training until January the 1st. This is to come in 2022, not for next year. The GPA and the CPA seem to support it, and they have two championship restructures. I'm not going to get into them, but I don't know, Conor. It looks like it's fairly positive enough stuff that we might in 2022 have nothing to give out about on the show here.
Yeah, and it only took the GAA, it only took a global pandemic for the GAA to realise the way forward, will you? but no, it's great. Listen, everybody, we talked about it during the summer. Everybody has seen the benefits in terms of like more games, less training at the club level, tighter schedule. And the big thing about it is that you don't have your club season dictated to by the demands of intercounty. And one thing I think as well that's been really important for the advent of the split season is that, like, to a man, from what I saw, like, intercounty players were all on board with it as well. And, like, you know, you could say that that's lip service. They'd say that because they're club people at heart as well as county players. But it seems very, very genuine that the county players have rode in behind it as well. So, listen, it's rare that there's, you know, kind of universal agreement on GAA matters across the board. But I think that seems to be the case here, and it's good job it's been recognised. And, you know, I don't think anyone will have any issue with it not coming in until 2022, because the likelihood is, depending on what happens over the next couple of months, that next year might be a bit kind of interrupted anyway. So, listen, I think I'm all for this, and just glad to see that, you know, that there seems to be a big movement. Like, I know you mentioned the championship structures there, but the status quo option looks to be, it's still there as an option, but yeah, there needs to be a big movement towards a split season, and I think that's definitely the way forward.
No, it definitely is. All-Ireland finals in mid-July, Ger, you're a traditionalist. How do you feel about that?
I would be very happy, Wooly. I was talking to a club mate of mine over the last few days, and in when was it, 2007, I think it was around December the 9th or 10th, we played Portlaoise in a Leinster club final, and I remember doing an interview in the build up to that game. And one of the questions one of the reporters asked was about, would you like to have the club season done before Christmas as opposed to waiting to St. Patrick's Day? And I would have said yes at that time. And any time I've ever heard a player being interviewed who's representing their club at provincial final stage, and they seem to be asked that question every year for the last donkey's years, would you rather get the club played in the one season? I've yet to hear anybody say no. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it just makes absolutely perfect sense to get that done. Like, the even recalling some of my Dublin days in the early years, Wooly, you know, there'd be four, sometimes 5 weeks between the quarterfinal of Leinster and the semi-final, and you'd be getting absolutely flogged, and there'd be no access to the club in terms of turning out for a couple of club games. Maybe a few fellas on the extended panel would be allowed to go back, but it was just a tough slog over the summer months. And I think, you know, you look at other professional sports, the NFL, even basketball, I know they have different models and that, but you know, it's a defined season. You play this amount of games during this particular time. You get your body right for this part of the season, and off you go. And I know I'm meandering a small bit, but going looking for the Dublin Club Championship this year, Ballymun Kickhams. Ballymun have had the most representatives on the county for the last number of years, and their inability to win more Dublin Championships would have been, not that I'm complaining, but by the lack of access to their players. Now, St. Vincent's, we were in the similar boat for a good few years as well, while not having the same amount of fellas in the starting 15 for Dublin, but we were able to manage that a bit better. But I think we're going to see really, really competitive club championships now, with players being fully available, with no couple of games in April, and then you're back to the county, and then you're absolutely knackered after a prolonged inter-county campaign, and all you want to do is go on holidays, or have a few beers and relax, and then...
Yeah, you're still going to have that though, Jared. Like, I mean, this year the club came before the inter-county. The inter-county is going to end the middle of July, but you're still going to have that issue with, you know, Dean Rock, James McCarthy, and these fellas coming back, you know, walking wounded after potentially winning an All-Ireland. That problem isn't going away.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I think that I suppose what I'm hinting at is, when you're representing your club in that April window, as they had done in Dublin before they brought in the April for clubs under John Horan, Dublin always played a couple of rounds of championship in April. You always had the county in the back of your mind, and there was always that bit of pressure there.
Yeah,
there was nothing more enjoyable than the county being finished and going back and playing for the club, if you got a bit of a break after the county, and just enjoying the lads, enjoying the crack. You're not necessarily dropping your standards, but you know that there isn't a microscope on you the whole time in terms of every single movement or GPS tracking that you would have in an inter-county setup, and becomes more freeing, more enjoyable. And I think it's great that the club is going to come after the county, in my opinion.
Yeah, because there is the danger, Conor, that if the club comes first, you know, the county managers will be pressuring them to come the one night a week, or maybe, you know, whatever. At least when the club is after the county managers with all their power are gone, and you're kind of back. There's a little bit more freedom for them.
Yeah, we said that during the summer, because I think people were so energized by the return of club football that they were suggesting that, like, oh, this should be the way it should be all the time. And
there's still people actually asking for that. I don't understand it.
I don't either, Willie. You know, we were saying as much during the summer, like, you know, you don't all of a sudden forget about the inter-county. And there was a perception that we talked about a couple of times that, like, you know, that inter-county players cared more about their clubs than their county, which definitely, you know, might be the case in isolated cases, but these lads were hell bent on representing their county as well to the best of their ability. So, like, I think that it works better that way, and I think it's not unfair on the clubs that, you know, that the county comes first, because, you know, the All-Ireland finals are, you're looking at mid-July, so for the vast majority of counties, they can begin their championship in maybe, you know, mid to late June, and they still get a good run in the summer at it, whereas before, you know, it might have been a bit later. So, and that's the big thing there is, like Mayo has been quite good, actually, to be fair, in terms of interference with, you know, like, county interference in club matters, but there's a lot of counties where that's absolutely not the case. So the fact that when you're splitting it down the middle, no county manager can get to influence the club campaign once the inter-county season is over.
Just on that, I wouldn't like that to happen. I would like, if the All-Irelands are in mid-July, that every county start their inter-county season and on August the 1st, or else you have the kind of the whole club players sitting around waiting. Are we playing next week, or are the county going to win or lose? No, you know, like, let's just say the inter-county season ends mid-July. Every single county, imagine every county's kicking off their club campaign on the 1st of August. There'd be a great bit of, you know, excitement and interest in it. Whereas if they all start in different dribs and drabs, I don't think there is the same. I think if your county, like you're saying, Conor, is knocked out early in May or June, play the last four or five league games with your club, you know, build up into the club championship season. I think that might be that's probably what will happen. Here we were talking about this, Ger, on the show on Monday, a quote from Niall Carew after he lost to Offaly the other day. He says, I would be hoping that we get back training in 2 weeks' time for pre-season, and there are a few other lads in Carlow I would like to look at as well. Like, I mean, this lad is a right drill sergeant, slave master. He's giving you 2 weeks off is all he's doing.
These Kildare fellas, they've an army background, some of these fellas. I think Niall, after the final whistle, Wooly, we were obviously disappointed, but we were so encouraged and excited as a management by what we saw from the Carlow guys and the heart and commitment they demonstrated, and from a kind of some technical and tactical learnings, they were so obvious to us on the line that we were just nearly getting overexcited about getting back and working on them, because they were easily fixed, and we were kind of looking at, even historically, the game on Sunday between Carlow and Offaly was the 11th time they've ever met in Championship, with Carlow only winning once, I think, maybe in the 50s or 60s. And we were just a bit giddy, I suppose, after the bit of a huddle. But look at what you're looking to do, Woolly, is your pre-season. Like, you do need a good 6 weeks of a pre-season if you're managing an elite team. And even just going back to my early years with Dublin, where we were knocked out that bit early on occasion. You would certainly, as a younger player, a few areas of development were identified from a strength point of view, and you'd be looking in the next 2 or 3 weeks just to probably do a bit of testing with a couple of guys to see where they're at. And
I wasn't really criticizing it. I was more psychologically, I couldn't get my head around it, because this is pre-season time, but we're not even at Leinster semi-finals. stage. It's just getting all our heads around the fact. I don't think there's anything really wrong in what Niall Carew said.
See, there was probably 3 or 4 fellas, established guys in previous years who, for different reasons, weren't able to get back involved, and we were kind of maybe excited about those fellas, if they do want to get back involved, that they would touch base. But then we did look at about nearly, I think, 58 players over a 3 week kind of trial period. And there's a few guys there that have a bit of potential that you'd like to get your hands on. But given this short time frame that we had to prepare for the league and the championship, we couldn't hold on to them this time round. But you'd like to kind of throw them on some sort of programme. And again, it's important. You're not going out flogging fellas at all. I remember Shane Ryan, midfielder from Dublin Woolly, and Ryan won't mind me sharing this. He's a good sense of humour. But Ryan used to come back after the winter, and he'd have about 2 stone on him. And he'd be eating the sausages and everything else before games. He'd be staying in hotels or whatever before league games, and he'd be having a full-on fry. And I used to be looking at him saying, what are you doing? You know? But he used to be all about peaking for the summer. Well, inevitably, that approach that used to exist in Gaelic football and hurling, where you come back fat in the winter and then you slog lads, the amount of injuries you actually pick up, soft tissue injuries, because the load goes from 0 to 100% in the short term of the time. But we all know now that sports science informs us that you have to be doing something in the off season, just even light, just to keep a bit of fitness going. And the closer you get to the league, then you can kind of up the tempo and reduce the amount of injuries, you know. That was a good answer, Woolly, to your
It was. Well, I don't really know why you have to explain who Shane Ryan is to me, by the way. Like, I have played against him, and he's flying it with the Dublin Masters as well, apparently. Yeah. We played them last year, but he was injured. I think he was injured or something. Maybe that's down to his you know, going from 0 to 100 too
fast. Ryan is a neighbour of mine, and he now has 3 kids, so I see him dragging the 3 kids over to the playground, and his back is in bits, you know. So he's working too hard.
He's playing wing. He plays centre back for the Masters. Apparently, he pulls all the strings, a bit like a Kieran McGeaney. But anyways, we're not going to get into Masters. I want to finish on this point. Something that's been bothering me a little bit lately, Connor, and that's this word restarts. So there's too many people. It's coaching jargon. It has seeped into punditry, And now we're at a point where we're not calling kickouts kickouts, we're calling them restarts. And I was tweeting about this yesterday. I just saw restarts on Twitter. And Stephen Poacher, I think he's a proponent of the word restarts. Again, coming from coaching, Manuel, I've had that in inverted commas here. You can't see me. But he says restarts. He uses the word restarts. And maybe this is what made him reply back to me. But he says restarts can come in the form of kickouts, free kicks, sideline balls, marks, and free possession from an injury blown by the referee. It's a way of restarting the game. And I don't know, I was scratching my head and I was thinking, Jesus, am I very old fashioned that I would just prefer to call them kickouts, free kicks, sideline balls, marks, and free possession from an injury, Connor?
I'm exactly the same as you, Wally. I was like, well, that, you know, you've taken about six terms to explain different things to me that all come under the one banner. So why not just call them what you've been calling them for donkey's years yourself? You know, I'd be like you. So words like process, words like restarts, and process is a particular one for me that's creeped in.
The process,
That's creeped in the last maybe 10 to 15 years. And I know, listen, before anyone comes at me, I know it serves a purpose. But like the to hear it just repeated ad nauseum by players that are saying, you know, that they stick to the process, whatever. And, you know, I thought it had been forgotten about to a certain degree. And then I read Bernard Brogan's book there lately, and he called Johnny Cooper a process ninja, which was taking it to another level altogether. So yeah, I'm with you. So just call them what they've always been called, as opposed to trying to recreate new words for them.
Well, I agree. Process is a good one. And that's Jim Gavin went to town on that one. Transition is another one. And this kind of entered into the kind of punditry lexicon when, you know, the defensive systems. And this is another one of Poacher's, where he comes up with about five or six different transition moves, like a blast off transition. I don't know. This is all a load of old nonsense, Ger, as far as I'm concerned. Listen, just call them what they are and stop trying to act clever.
So I tell you, right, I not that I'm disagreeing, which is right. I'm obviously fairly no nonsense myself. The game isn't rocket science, and again, you can have your structures, your strategies. You can have your buzzwords. Ultimately, you have to have fit fellas and talented fellas to actually go out and perform the basics, right? But probably what Poacher, again, I don't know the man from Adam, but what he's probably getting at is sometimes in the moment within a game where a game can be either going away from you or you're in the ascendancy and you can switch off and sit back. If you break the game up into the different moments or restarts, of which there's about 80 in a game of Gaelic football, roughly 40 for each team, it's just a way of focusing the fellas' minds and keeping them in the present moment. If you think too much about the outcome, you can become distracted and you can actually get lost within a game. So in terms of the modern player, and only that, again, that I'm working in UCD as well with the GA side of things the last 5 years, Willie, that's the language that they have kind of become accustomed to.
Is it?
Which me and you were accustomed to was do your bloody job. And,
well, no, hang on. You know? The language I would have been accustomed to is, lads, you have to concentrate. When the ball goes out of play, don't switch off.
Yeah.
Now that's turned into restarts.
Yeah. Well, next ball was the one we used to get.
Next ball, yeah.
You know, so.
Are we retiring next ball and stay alive when the ball goes out of play? Are they gone now?
No, they're still there. I like to use stay alive a good bit, and especially when our forwards are trying to defend, because the forward tends to dive in and there's an overlap, you know, created. So if the forward just stays alive as best he can, you give ourselves a chance. But different things work for different players. Like
I can just imagine, like, restarts in a South Dublin accent. Restart, guys.
I tell you, right, game scenario was probably something I just became accustomed to. And again, it's whatever suits you and suits the fellas you're working with. You have to make it work. If you go back to Stephen Cluckson's point in the 2011 All-Ireland final, well, Clucko was lining up the ball. I was turning around to get back to full back, I think maybe Dennis Bastic or that was going to get the centre back. And then Rory O'Carroll was going to jump in the goal. So we were setting that up while Klucka was placing the ball. If the ball was to go short or he would miss hit it, and that we would be ready for the restart or for
the kick out.
We call it for the kick out. That would be set up, you know. But the more involved a team is, the less they need to talk about it. They just nearly turn around and you're looking at each other and you see what's happening in front of you and you're able to do what you practice in training. But anyway, different buzzwords for different coaches.
Yeah. So it's not going. You're telling me it's not going anywhere. It's gotten into the colleges and the universities, and we're all screwed.
Set plays is probably another one that you hear being thrown around. So if it's a sideline ball,
yeah,
playing against a packed defense, that's you've worked through a couple of set plays, and
I can accept set plays.
Yeah.
I won't get cross with set plays.
Yeah. But set plays is probably what I use. Game scenario is something I would use in the kind of the tactics room, where you're trying to get fellas to visualize what they're likely to see on the field, so they don't have to think too much about it when they're faced with it in real time, you know. But see, we've so much access to Netflix and everything else and all these coaching shows that you see, like, you know, there's actually a lot on Netflix at the moment about different coaches. Jose Mourinho is on it. Jose is fairly no nonsense as well, like, you know. So
right, I blame the internet, basically. All right, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll come back and talk about the matches.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so Cork versus Kerry, lads. This is on Sunday at 4 o'clock. It's on the television. Obviously, it's in Páirceachaíoch again, which is surprising enough considering it was in Páirceachaíoch last year. Am I right in that?
It was, yeah. Cork got three goals that game, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the game last year that Kerry, I don't know why, I would have thought they had a home and away agreement, Cork and Kerry. Anyways, I'm not going to get bogged down on that.
On a Páirceachaíoch, Wooly, I think they may have had to play two times in a row in Kerry.
Páirceachaíoch was being that's probably it. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for that, Jared, for clearing that up. Cork have injuries. Kieran Sheehan is out, Lee O'Donovan is out, Thomas Clancy's out, Kevin Crowley's out, James Lockery, who was going to fill in probably at full back, is out. So they have problems in their full back line. That's with Lockery and Lee O'Donovan, definitely. It's not the best place, Connor, in the world to be having issues in when you're coming up against Tony Brosnan and David Clifford.
Yeah, and especially with Tony Brosnan and David Clifford shooting the lights out as they have been so far, you know, I was trying to kind of get a handle on how Cork might set up, and it's really because I suppose they've only played one game since the resumption, and they have so many injuries to so many key players, as you mentioned there, and with Kerry looking as potent in attack as they have done. So, and I don't think, you know, we'll probably get into it, I don't think it necessarily suits, you know, as other teams might, they might just kind of go a little more defensive, but I don't think it suits Cork's style. So, like, obviously, it's going to be the first port of call for Ronan McCarthy the next day as to what to do. So, how they'll set up against it is going to be very interesting. But, like, you know, who in the world could mark David Clifford at the moment? I'm not sure, but whoever does, because it's going to have a serious job in their hands.
Yeah, I don't think it suits the Cork players to go overly defensive, Jer. And Keane O'Neill teams, we know he's the coach and he has a big input there. Like, I mean, he kind of almost copied the Dublin model with the Keane O'Sullivan dropping back. It was Owen Doyle, their centre-back, kind of would drop back off his man and kind of cover, you know, a traditional centre-half-back, which kind of turned a little bit into a sweeper. I think that's probably what we'll see from Cork without going overly defensive when it doesn't suit them.
Yeah, look, it's against their nature, Cork, to kind of park the bus. Not saying that they may show it at the weekend, given where they are coming up from Division 3 and the injuries that you highlighted there. I think whether they park the bus or they play with their centre back, kind of dropping off in general play, I think they're still going to be under pressure against this Kerry team. I think if they are to have any chance, I think they have to maybe try and go toe to toe and try to force, well, not let Kerry settle initially in the early parts of the game and put as much pressure on them as possible further out the field, and try to turn over a few of the Kerry defenders, because all of those defenders, between Thomas Sullivan, Gavin White, they're popping up in the opposition full forward line regularly in the last couple of games, popping over scores or winning frees and creating havoc. And then Conor mentioned Brosnan there, Paul Geaney as well, to come into that full forward line. Like, it's a very ominous challenge for Cork at the moment. I think if Kerry are in the mood, I think they could hockey Cork, to be honest. Between the injuries and the level that Cork been playing at last year, I know they won Division 3 well, but it's just such a huge step up in terms of competition. I don't see whether Cork put out 15 or 20, 25 players. I still think they're going to get bet. You know?
Yeah. Paul Kerrigan played the last game against Loud and ran amok in the full forward line. And like, he's been there a long time. And Tom Sullivan destroyed him last year, attacking on him from corner back. And like, it's hard to know where to play Paul Kerrigan, Connor, because if he plays in a full forward line, you can be sure Tom Sullivan will pick him up. And he's not going to have an easy day chasing him all over the field. Maybe if you're going to play him centre half forward, potentially, where, you know, Peter Crowley might not follow him.
I think that's a good shout. I mean, we kind of associate Paul Kerrigan with being the classic like wing forward, you know, back maybe a few years ago. But like, I don't think Tom Sullivan showed last year that it absolutely does not suit Paul Kerrigan to be chasing back the pitch. And I don't think, you know, Kerrigan would have had the legs for that. Does have the legs for that now, as he might have used to have back in the day either. So the thing with the good thing about maybe playing him at 11 is that, you know, for all Kerry do have an attacking threat from their half back line, they'll probably still want to, you know, maintain some sort of shape at six, with probably Peter Crowley there as well. So if you're looking, there's fellas better placed in the Cork forward line if people do have to be chasing back after the likes of Tom Sullivan, after Gavin White. And I would say they will, because we've just said that like Cork probably aren't going to go defensive. So I think with that in mind, it would probably suit Kerrigan to play at 11, as you mentioned. And then like, he can put in decent ball inside, whether it's to, you know, they have a couple of good options. If Mark Collins is going to be in there, it could be Brian Hurley if he's fit, or O'Callaghan, who's come up from the under-20s, been doing well as well. So that seems to me like the most sensible option for Cork to play Kerrigan on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I think a centre half forward. Then you have Rory Dean, who's brilliant. He's an outstanding player, and Killian O'Hanlon. You could play them on the two wings to maybe, you know, have more of a work rate to be following Murphy and Gavin White. You know, so like maybe that's the full forward line. We're not sure about Brian Hurley. He could be right. If he's fit, it'll probably be Brian Hurley, Mark Collins inside, and Luke Connolly drifting out in front of them. I'm not sure any of those young fellas are going to push in ahead of those three unless Hurley is out. Luke Connolly likes to drift around and has good distribution as well. So, like, I mean, if that's the case, you'd imagine Tom Sullivan will pick up Hurley. You'd imagine Jason Foley pick up Luke Connolly, and you'd have Tadhg Morley on Collins. You know, those kind of matchups. All these matchups will be interesting. Like, I mean, I understand Kerry be strong favourites here, but Cork can hurt them, Jaron. They did hurt them last year. Like, I mean, they scored three goals. I think it was 3-10 to 1-19. They had Kerry in all sorts of problems, and I think that's where Kerry's reputation for having a poor backline came from. Was that actual Munster final?
Yeah, and was it Rory Dean? I'm trying to remember that creating a lot of havoc for them in the first half. In terms of driving through and taking his man, like I would say, Woody, for the up to the first half water break, you know, it'd be tit for tat. Cork will go as hard as they can. They will create a couple of opportunities, but I just think there's far too much firepower, far too much hunger in the Kerry setup at present, and the trajectory of the current Kerry team under Peter Keane. It's just at a different level for me at the moment. I know it is Championship, the Cork Kerry rivalry that's there. that's going to add another couple of percentages to the performance of the core players. But ultimately, those forwards that you mentioned, bar Hurley, I wouldn't be, and fairness, Dean did well, but Rory Dean last year, I think Kerry probably didn't pay enough attention to him, maybe in their build-up to it, and that he did creep in, but you can be sure that he's not going to get a look at this time round, and that Peter Keane will have the lads well primed to ensure that he isn't getting in. But outside of Hurley, if he is fit and he does play, I just don't see the other Cork forwards being in a position to get by and to damage the Kerry defence. I just think Kerry are just at a whole different level altogether.
Are you concerned about Kerry as a dub, Ger?
Yes, yeah. Well, Kerry, they're going to win at some stage, right? Talk about a general bloody statement, but when we broke the mold in 2011, and it's hard to do, you know. When we broke through, the bit of confidence that came from that it's unbelievable, and all of a sudden that bit of a fear factor that you have when you were playing against the likes of Kerry and Tyrone and even Cork, but it's 2010 and that a couple of times, I think 2011 league final as well. But once you beat them once, you know, you can go on and push on and do what Dublin have obviously done. And I think I would be fearful as a dub that Kerry will do the same with the players that they have. So the longer that somebody, hopefully Dublin, keep them down, the better. But they are going to have their moment, and it is going to be very, very soon, you know.
Yeah, well, you want to keep your foot in their heads for as long as possible, I think. We don't know what the situation. Sean Potter looks like he might be back to fitness. Sean White, again, hopeful back to fitness. Matty Taylor, that'll be the Cork half back line. If you're a half back, an attacking wing back aficionado like I am, I used to be one, you're in for a treat in this game, because you've Paul Murphy, Gavin White, Sean Potter, and Matty Taylor, who are very, very good exponents of this. Connor.
Yeah, and there could be scope for them to, it's like from the Cork point of view as well, there could be scope for attack, because like if you look at the formation of the Kerry half forward line, for example, Micheál Burns, Sean O'Shea will probably stay up. Micheál Burns and Buckley will probably look to kind of, you know, get back and kind of rope out and around the midfield and defence as well. So there could be opportunity there for Cork to plough on. I was kind of just looking at the Cork injuries beforehand. Sean Powder, there seems to be a bit of a doubt over him. It's ever since I saw him play, he absolutely tore Mayo asunder in the Gaelic grounds in 2017, I think. And any time, like, he's been plagued with injury since, unfortunately. But yeah. I've rarely seen somebody, it was the first time I'd seen him, and I'd rarely been excited watching, obviously it was against Mayo at the time, but I'd rarely been so excited watching somebody with such pace and such low centre of gravity and such ability to do damage. And then on the other side, like, Gavin White is in the absolute form of his life. For Kerry, you know, really coming into his own, like absolutely, like showing that it suits him at seven, as opposed to playing as a wing forward who might be, you know, getting the ball facing the wrong way, as was the case a couple of times last year. So definitely, like I think if should the Cork lads that you mentioned there come back, like Kerry's half back line has turned from one of the what was might have been deemed as a kind of a problem line for them into their one of their strengths too. So both teams will be looking at it as a huge platform for them to attack and win the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the Kerry team that played Donegal will be very close. Paul Geaney's not fit. James O'Donoghue's not fit. So we're looking at a full forward line of Tony Brosnan, David Clifford, Darren Moynihan. I think the backs are settled. Jason Foley, Tadhg Morley, Thomas Sullivan, Paul Murphy, Peter Crowley, Gavin White. That's their back line. David Moran in midfield. Dermot O'Connor looks to have passed out Jack Barry. He probably is more of a dynamic player, has more strings to his bow and is a bit lighter on his feet than Jack Barry, but Jack Barry is definitely a good option to be bringing in. Their half forward line, Sean O'Shea, is a guarantee. You have Ronan Buckley and Micheál Burns. Now, they could be potentially two places that are up for grabs. Ronan Buckley is a workhorse. And I suppose, Ger, that's a matter of getting the balance right in any team, that when you have attacking halfbacks, you know, you need somebody that when Gavin White passes by them in a blur, because you knew that Ronan Buckley will drop back and maybe plug a hole there.
Yeah, and Ronan has just come up to UCD doing his teaching masters, and haven't gotten to know him a small bit now in the brief time we've had together. So he was Ronan was delighted with his performances in the Kerry Championship, and he was given some of those man marking dogging kind of roles from the middle of the field, and he obviously performed very, very well, which resulted in getting a run in the last couple of league games. And again, every team, whether it's Dublin or Kerry, you need a few fellas who are going to just do the donkey work, the unseen work, the stuff that doesn't make the Sunday game footage or whatever. But without them, the team wouldn't be as successful as they would be. I think you mentioned Tony Brosnan there. Now he's someone up front I was very impressed with. In their game against Donegal, I think he's someone I don't know a whole lot about just yet. But from the little I've seen of him, like, he just seems so comfortable playing at that level, and he's going to cause big headaches for certainly the likes of Gini and the Donoghue who are trying to get back into the team. But for the core full back line, I think he's going to have a field day. It's some forward unit and attacking half back line that Kerry have, Woolley, and the likes of Ronan Buckley, and if Jack Barry does come in, Jack would play a similar ish kind of role to Ronan Buckley in trying to probably curb the influence of one of the attacking midfielders or one of the attacking wing forwards. So we'll probably see Jack at some stage then as well. But again, I just find it very, very hard to see a way through for Cork. If they were playing in Division 1 this year, I'd give them more hope. But again, that standard, that intensity, that tempo that you get in Division 1 just isn't there in challenge games or in Division 3. And I think they are going to have to work without them. And like I mentioned already, that bit of adrenaline that you will get going into a Munster Championship game, Cork and Kerry, that'll get you so far. But I would be fearful for the Cork team.
Yeah, I suppose that is a fair point. The Division 3 point, it's been a long time. It's been the Super 8s last year since they played that level of opposition, Connor. You're looking at having an easy enough time in Division 3 and only playing one game, which is a complete demolition of Loud, with a good few injuries where you didn't get to even play your full team. Whereas, like I said with Kerry, you look at Kerry's team that played against Donegal, and I think that will be, maybe Stephen O'Brien will come back in there, but I think that will be, you know, their team. You're not comparing, it's chalk and cheese, the preparation of both teams coming into this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think Cork showed during the Super 8s last year that they definitely have an aspiration to be at level, and they weren't that far off, but there was just, you know, like, Dublin pulled away from them, Tyrone pulled away from them in the end. They weren't quite at that level yet. And I suppose the ideal thing for them, you know, on the back of that would have been something like a Division 1 campaign. Instead, they found themselves down in Division 3. Now, listen, they've been shooting the lights out in Division 3. I think they've been averaging 217 or something like that, and they've scored 1296 in the league or something like, you know, something ridiculous. But that's against opposition that's not nearly the quality.
You sound like Pat Spillane now. He loves a league.
Forwards, Willie, and how many people can play in each app.
Here's Pat. I'll give you Pat Spillane's analysis on this. This is a Division 3 team coming up against Division 1 team, and I'm going to put that into my calculator, and I can only see a Kerry victory here on Sunday.
Pat has said it better than I ever could. But that's, listen, Cork, like, I just think that this game probably will come a bit early for Cork. I think they're definitely on the right trajectory, and I think they're going to benefit hugely from playing in Division 2 next year, which Division 2 is always crazy competitive. It's going to even be more competitive last year or next year with the teams that have come up from Division 3 and the teams with Mayo and Meath coming down from Division 2 as well. So I think that Cork will eventually benefit from that. But this, they're playing in against a Kerry team who I think are in, you know, Ger was on about her Dublin worry there. I would be absolutely petrified if I was Dublin, because I think just Kerry look in absolute tip-top shape. I think they were brilliant last year, and I think they've ironed out any little kind of issues that they might have had. I think defensively particularly, I think they're even more of a unit. They always had the individuals, but they're more of a unit now. And I think they'll show on Sunday how they are fixed and possibly make a statement that could make them even favourites to go on and win it.
There might be, Ger, a bit of a comparison between ye in 2011, in that in 2010 you finished that season, while you didn't get to an All-Ireland final, but you put in a brilliant performance against Cork. You were very close that day. And coming back in 2011, it wasn't like the years before you'd been well beaten. And, you know, I suppose psychologically, you were wondering where you were at. In 2011, you started that year saying, look, we were just a kick of a ball away from the very best teams. And maybe Kerry, in their own heads, were arguably should have beaten Dublin the first day last year in the All-Ireland final. There might be some similarities there between ye in 2011 and Kerry this year.
No, there 100% is, Willie. And, you know, the Kerry players would have reviewed the All-Ireland final, I'm sure. And they would have looked at a couple of really simple areas and mistakes that they may have made. You know, if you're a Peter Keane, you are trying to be positive and optimistic and a glass three quarters full with the group and say, look at lads, if we had done this right and that right, small things, we could be all Ireland champions here, and that's how close we are to being the best. But yeah, there will be a lot of similarities there. I think, Willie, if I was in the Kerry panel and haven't been in, obviously a fairly competitive Dublin environment for a couple of years, sometimes the pressure of when you're starting, the pressure of what's behind you on the line is almost as much, if not more, of a motivating factor when you do take to the field in the first 15. And bar, again, you could name six or seven definite starters on any Dublin or any Kerry team, but the pressure of knowing that if you do underperform, that there is a man now behind you who is pretty much almost equally as good, and he's going to come in and get his opportunity. So you literally have to perform in this game against Cork.
Does that add an extra bit of pressure that sometimes can be a bit too much, in that when you make a mistake, instead of just shaking it off, you have that in your head that somebody could come in and replace you? I don't know. I just think in my head, when I was playing at my best, obviously you don't want to get to a level where you're in a comfort zone, but I was never ever thinking of coming off at the same time.
So it's you kind of want to exist within that space of being confident,
and
not so much arrogant, but certainly confident that,
but not scared either.
So if for argument's sake, and a couple of times I might have had a bad game here or there, I knew that I needed to put the head down for the next 2 or 3 weeks in training, because I didn't play to the level that I certainly know I can play to. So I'm going to have to just work my ass off for the next 2 or 3 weeks in training. All going well, I get the nod, which thankfully I did most of the time. And then you do take confidence that you have been given the jersey again, and you are taking to the field. But if you get too comfortable, like you mentioned, you can become complacent and you end up getting whipped off. If you're too much the other way, well, then you become overly fearful, and then the ball becomes like a hot potato. And ultimately, that's where that pressure is an absolute necessity if you want to become an elite performer. You do need to know that there are people coming for you within your own setup, while also acknowledging the opposition that you're playing against, that they want what you want, and are you willing and man enough to face it head on and give it your all? So there's a couple of psychological things going on there, right? What do you know?
Yeah, no, there definitely is. Are we all going for Kerry here, lads? Just keep it short.
Yes, for me.
Yeah, same as.
Yeah, okay, right, that'll do. I don't think it'll be a hammering like Jared is. Jared, see, Jared, you seem to be falling down towards a hammering. I think Kerry might win it by 4 or 5.
I'm going to, right, depending on the weather, right, I'll go with 7 or 8 if the weather's bad, and I'll go with 12, 13 if the weather's good.
Jesus!
To the show on Monday, and you can reference me, good or bad.
So. All right, okay, we'll come back and we'll look at the other games.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a soppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
All right, predictions time, lads. And the first one we're going to come to, we'll spend a bit more time on this one, is Roscommon Mayo. It's the other big one of the weekend. Like, I mean, like a strange stat I saw, Connor, was Mayo went into the Sligo game with only five players that started the 2017 All-Ireland final. Like, I mean, what a turnover. It's incredible. Like, no Keith Higgins, no Colin Boyle, no Donny Vaughan, no Seamus O'Shea, no Tom Parsons. Brendan Harrison and Jason Doherty, they're both injured, so they're out. You'd imagine both of them would probably be still around. Like, this is a completely new Mayo team.
Yeah, I heard you talking about this on Monday's show as well, Willie. And it's like, the thing in Mayo has been the last few years is that we've been worried about what's going to happen when that, you know, the team from, let's say, 2013 to 2017, 2018 is going to fall apart. And now we're worried that this transition is coming too soon and that they're being maybe, you know, pushed aside a little bit too quickly. Because I don't know, I felt against, you know, the Galway game was a complete misnomer in terms of what, you know, what we're going to get in the rest of the championship. And I just felt that against Tyrone, particularly, that there was, that Mayo were a bit naive at times and needed that experience, which amazed me that the likes of Colin Boyle, the likes of Chris Barrett, Keith Higgins, weren't given even, you know, Chris Barrett, I think, got maybe...
Barrett came on.
Yeah, got 10 minutes the last day as well. Do you know, like, I thought that they'd even try and blood them. So if they felt that they needed them against, you know, in the heat of a championship battle against Roscommon, that they'd be able to call on them. And they, you know, they're not coming in completely from the cold. So, listen, it's a completely different Mayo team. And even it was interesting to hear James Horan after the Galway game. He was asked about the absence of those lads that you've just mentioned. And they were called, in the question, they were called guaranteed starters. And he kind of winced at that. And he was like, you know, that term doesn't apply to this squad anymore. This is acknowledging himself that it's a complete new team. It's exciting in one way, Willie. I mean, like, look at what we, you know, what we did against Galway. There was times against Tyrone where we looked like we could shoot the lights out as well. And then you look at individuals like Oisín Mullen and Tommy Gonnery and stuff and how they've progressed. But at the same time, I just, like, in against Roscommon, who I would not underestimate at all. And I was cringing earlier on when, you know, you were mentioning a Connacht final between Galway and Mayo, because it's definitely not that clear cut. I think that Mayo could...
You only put Mayo in there to keep you guessing about whether you wanted this Sligo game rescheduled. Yeah, don't worry about it. It would have been an easier answer had I thrown Roscommon in there.
That's exactly it. But I would... Listen, like, Roscommon came to Castlebar and won, I think it was for the first time in 30 years last year. I would worry about Mayo's kind of, you know, Mayo have lorded it over Roscommon in the physical stakes and in midfield the last few years, and I don't think that'll be the case on Sunday. So,
that's a good point. I'll just throw that to you, and that is something I have in my notes here. Like, you're looking at Seamus O'Shea, Tom Parsons, and Aidan O'Shea, and like I'm including Galway in this with Roscommon. Roscommon always had a problem in midfield. Mayo have offered. You know what I mean? That strength and give it, you know, almost like they have Matthew Ruan and Conor Loftus in midfield. Now, you're looking at them going up against Tiger Rourke and Compton, which probably is Roscommon's first choice midfield. Like, it's not, again, it's not a match for the very top teams at all. It's still a weak midfield, no disrespect to the two lads, but it probably is a match for Ruan and Loftus.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. And I would extend that, Willie, to go to... So Mayo started off, like, Rory Brickenden was named to start at six against Leitrim. He didn't. Michael Plunkett started there, but he hasn't been a regular by any stretch. And Ryan O'Donoghue started at 11. So that quartet around the middle, there's still a little bit of uncertainty. And just on Loftus and Ruan as well, I mean, Conor Loftus plays midfield for his club, but this is the first exposure he's got to midfield at county level. And listen, he's very mobile. Matty Ruan is very mobile as well, but you would absolutely not call either of them, you know, fielders. Are, you know, specialist fielders by any stretch, and they're not exactly dogs on the ground, you know, in terms of winning breaking ball either. And I thought that against Tyrone particularly, I thought Mayo struggled on breaking ball, and as we saw against Donegal at the weekend, like, the Tyrone are by no means the market leaders in that respect either. So I think because of that aspect of the game, I think that it takes on a completely different dimension, because for the last few years, I know Roscommon beat us last year, but because of the strength that we've had around the middle with the names you mentioned there, Parsons, two O'Shea's, you know, Mayo have nearly taken it for granted that we're going to have midfield dominance, and we're not going to have that. And obviously that's going to affect the type of ball that's going into a full forward line that seems to be set in its ways at the moment with Conroy O'Shea and Killian O'Connor. So if they're not getting the ball in, they're not going to get the damage. So that would be of the concerns that I have about Roscommon, our ability to kind of dominate the physical exchanges around the middle would be the biggest one.
In a way, you nearly have to respect James Horan, how, like, every manager has their philosophies, Ger. Like, I mean, he's a very attacking manager. Like, Rouen and Loftus are two attacking midfielders. Yeah. Like, he played no sweeper against the wind, against Tyrone, because he wanted to get scores into the wind. Like, listen, you can criticise this all you want. Now, to be fair, there is no real excuse for not having someone cover your full forward line against the gale force wind. But at the same time, if that's his philosophy, we see it in other sports. You know, like Guardiola will have his team press so high and commit so many players to attack. Yes, they can get caught on the break, but his philosophy is to go out and score, Ger. I respect it more than I respect somebody who's doing an easy option and putting 13 men inside the 45.
Well, two things on that, Woody. I would have said it before on the show that the template that Mayo have, or the blueprints template that Mayo have brought along with Kerry is the right one to try to take down a Dublin team, that kind of higher press, man on man, within reason type defence when you don't have the ball. You know, that's something that will work. The second thing is, again, I mentioned a few minutes ago, you can have your tactics and your structures, but they could be the best in the world, but without having the right personnel or the right talent on the field to be able to execute it, well, then you're going to come up short. And what I just listened to Connor, you obviously know the Mayo lads better. What I think James Horan is probably starting to realise, Connor, is like, say, Chris Barrett, I think, is he 34, maybe 35? Yeah. A lot of these fellas, Shamie O'Shea, they're all on the wrong side of 30, and they've been great servants, and they've gotten particularly close within a point, a draw game. What was that, 2016 or 17? Final. So they've gotten really, really, really close, but unfortunately they haven't been able to get over the line. So from the outside looking in, James Horan is obviously saying that, very happy with my philosophy, as you mentioned, Woody. That's your buzzword, Woody. You should go back. But I just now need to find a new few more bodies that I can put into this system and way of playing, and let the lads off and kind of express themselves. And I think it's a great way of playing the game, personally speaking. Those new fellas who are being introduced, I think they have to be introduced. I think they'll have little baggage and psychological damage in their heads. I think of the team, the established team, Connor, that we all know who they are.
Yeah.
I think Mayo can probably only hang on to five or six of those fellas in their starting 15 if they are going to progress and go on and try to compete for an All-Ireland.
Just on that, like, Jared, I'd throw this to you, Connor. I don't think they're All-Ireland contenders with that team, but I also don't think they're All-Ireland contenders with the old team either. Mm. So, like, you have to be realistic with it.
Yeah, I suppose, and if you're going to take that approach, he might as well take it now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, just decide now, this is the way forward, this is the way I'm going, and I'm going to go hell bent on it. My thing on it was, like, I was just basing this on what I've seen against Galway and Tyrone in particular. And like, while we destroyed Galway, I just thought there was still at times where there was a lot of naivety, and this was more so for Tyrone, because obviously what you mentioned there about not covering the full back line. And you don't even have to play a sweeper to do that. You know, somebody could have just kind of
used their centre back.
Put it upon themselves, exactly. Like, Kevin McLaughlin was playing centre back that day. It didn't work. He hasn't been seen since. Like, he had been carrying a knock. But it's just a simple matter of, listen, we have committed 12 men to the attack here. There's a gale force breeze, one turnover and it's on. Yeah. You know, it's not about playing a sweeper. It's about playing sensibly. And I would have said that, like, I just thought with, like, Cullen Boyle was there on the bench, or Chris Barrett or somebody like that, and I just thought somebody like that would just naturally know how to do it, whereas the likes of a Oisín Mullen or an Owen McLaughlin particularly might have been a bit bald-headed and say, listen, we're just, you know, going flat to the mat here, and we're just attacking without any, you know, without any fear for the consequence. So that while they're still there, I would have thought they would have been used, but the fact that only Chris Barrett has maybe got 10 minutes leads me to think that James Horan is just, this is the way he's going to go, and that's going to be it.
Yeah. I mean, on the Roscommon side, we kind of know how Roscommon set up at this stage. Like, Kieran Lennon and Conor Cox will stay up as much as possible. Whether the Mayo full back line will allow them to do that is up in the air. Craig will drift kind of out in front of them. Like, I mean, imagine Paddy Durkan is perfect for Enda Smith. Enda Smith is by far and away Roscommon's most important player. He makes them take Stephen Cohen, probably be able for Lennon, and Lee Keegan probably follow out Craig. I think Mayo have the matchup. Oisín Mullen, Mark Connor Cox, Connor, do you think?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Oisín Mullen will just attack poor Connor Cox. If Roscommon don't have a plan for when Oisín Mullen takes off the field and not have Connor Cox chasing him back, then if they're not discussing this during this week, and who's going to pick up Mullen when he goes, because we don't want Connor Cox gassed out, well then I don't know what kind of meetings they're having.
Yeah, I would imagine it's front and centre of Anthony Cunningham's kind of blueprint, and I would imagine that maybe the likes of he'll tell the likes of Niall Kilroy if Oisín Mullen is going to go. Like, Roscommon will be set up defensively to start anyway, so if Oisín Mullen does go, he'll meet a wall eventually. But Connor Cox doesn't want to be spending his time chasing him even up and down to the halfway line, because that has been a notable feature of Mayo's games in the last few games, how influential Oisín Mullen has been in terms of contributing to the Mayo attack. And he has been given man-marking jobs as well, with a bit of mixed success. Now, I fell for him against Tyrone because, as we said, it was 50 yards in front of him into a gale force breeze. But Conor Cox will, like, Oisín Mullen has been brilliant, but he's still not, he's probably still has a bit to learn. And, like, Conor Cox might think that there's a bit of change that we got out of him. But in terms of the matchups, I think you're spot on. I think Oisín Mullen for Conor Cox. And I can't see, Lee Keegan has been playing as a traditional cornerback. I thought that when he was named there, that it might be a case that he'd end up playing in the half-back line or something like that. But he has been playing as a traditional cornerback. Had he been in the half-back line, he's marked Enda Smith with good success before, so I thought that might have been it. But at the moment, definitely Paddy Durkan. And Paddy Durkin's on form too, and will want to, as he has done with other players, get Enda Smith facing the wrong way.
Yeah, he definitely will. It'll be interesting to see whether Mayo learn from that mistake. If there is a wind as well, which we keep factoring in. I always find it interesting when pundits are analysing games and don't actually take the wind into consideration. It's almost like they were very poor in that half. Yeah, they were playing into a gale force wind. Like, I mean, you can't say, like, that. You have to always, you know, include the wind in the analysis. So it will be interesting to see, did Mayo learn from their lesson? Because they're going to be facing a two-man full forward line. And if there is a wind, let's see how they have learned their lesson. We'll take predictions on this, Joe. How do you see this one going?
I'm unsure on this one, Molly, because Mayo can be so hot and cold. I think Roscommon, that defensive structure that they do have, it is a good system. Enda Smith is, if I was managing Enda Smith, one thing that probably would frustrate me watching him is sometimes he can be a one-trick pony. And if you do have somebody like a Lee Keegan or a Paddy Durkan on him, he's just not going to get away from those fellas as much as he likes. So he's probably somebody that maybe needs to evolve his game for a bit more. I think Mayo just have a bit more tempo and pace about them. For me, now, if it was in the Roscommon camp, you're now promoted to Division 1, Mayo are on their way down. Anthony Cunningham, that might be just an extra bit of motivation to stand on the throats of the local neighbours and rivals, and give them a good send off to Division 2. And that's something that I would sure they'll probably talk about. But I just think Mayo have just a bit more tempo and pace about them, so I'll go with a slight victory to Mayo.
Yeah, I'm going slight victory for Mayo too. What about you, Connor?
Yeah, same as like a point or 2 points. Well, yeah, I don't see any more in it than that.
Yeah, you'd be glad. You'd be glad to get out of Dr. Hyde with any sort of a win. Dublin Westmead, lads, as well. We're nearly out of time now, lads, so we don't have too much time to talk on this. We don't know what to expect from Dublin yet. Are any rabbits out of a hat? We know they're playing Westmead, who are a pretty defensive team under Jack Cooney. So, like, I mean, you know, I don't see Dublin potentially being bankers to cover the handicap like they used to be maybe under Jim Gavin. You know, they're still a work in progress, and Westmead won't make it easy for them.
No, they won't. And you mentioned the weather as well and the time of year we're playing at. And again, likely to be probably wind and rain, which will lessen the chances that Dublin will create. Like, on the soft ground, you're marking a Conor Callaghan or something like that, you're kind of saying to your defender, look, at if he wins the ball, just kind of stand up, don't dive in. It's going to be very hard for him to get past you. And as you say, stay in the game. What was the one, stay alive, Woody? Is that you?
Stay alive. I think that's your one.
Stay in the game. That's what you would be telling the Westmead defenders to do. You'd be going out to frustrate Dublin for as long as possible. Stay in the game. keep it within a couple of points going into the last quarter of the match, and then see what happens. But look at it'd be silly of us to go against nothing other than a Dublin victory. You know, they still did win their last two games. Desi is trialing a couple of new players, finding his feet without going too much away from the template that has been successful for Dublin. I know we chatted about that before. So, again, a Dublin victory by maybe 7 or 8, I would say.
Yeah, I'm very close to that too, Conor.
Yeah, exactly the same. They'll pull away in the second half to win by around 10 points, I would imagine.
All right, so Galway...
Me the whole time, lads, you know?
Galway Sligo is called off, as we're saying. So they're into the rest of the Leinster quarterfinals. Offaly play Kildare. This is in Amore Park. Oh, so that's a doubleheader. No, is that in Amore Park? And oh, this must be on Sunday in Amore Park. Kildare, because Dublin Westmeath is in Amore Park on Saturday. That's on the television. Jack O'Connor was saying during the week, he says, we think we're good enough. There's a lot of good footballers in Kildare. We're just trying to get the players to believe in themselves and what they're doing. He saw what happened in Dublin when they broke through. Suddenly, belief snowballed. First part is the hard part to crack. It's almost word for word what you had said earlier, Ger. Kildare obviously came back from the break. I hate using that word, lockdown. And to beat Cavan and beat Westmeath, the Westmeath were pretty defensive that day. For me, Kieran McKeever doesn't entertain Kildare at all. He doesn't really rate them. I think Kildare are Dublin's biggest threat in Leinster. And I think if they got it together with a new Dublin team, you know, on a bad day, like, I think it was Ben McCormack missed the chance. Was it 2 years ago in the Leinster final against Dublin? And it might have kept that game a little bit closer. I think Kildare are the second best team in Leinster. What's your thoughts on that?
I think Kildare's talent with Meath's heart would be a real challenge for Dublin and Leinster.
Yeah, you're right.
And Kildare, they know themselves.
Isn't that a terrible thing to say about Kildare, that they don't have any heart? Like, I see where you're coming from, but like, if Kildare players, like, I mean, it's a terrible label to get.
Yeah, and maybe heart is probably unfair, but just
steel
is probably the word. Yeah, and they, when the game is going well for them, they can probably get sometimes carried away with themselves. When the game is going away from them, they can go into themselves. And look at Jack O'Connor. Has he won 3 All-Irelands with Kerry? And at senior level, he obviously knows what he's talking about. So he's obviously identifying, as the three of us here can identify, savage footballers in Kildare. But putting it all together and getting the performance out of them and the consistency out of them, that seems to be Kildare's challenge on and off over the, well, throughout their history. Now, in fairness to Kieran McGeaney, got them really close, all around semi final. I think that was 2010. They lost it down. And that was the closest they would have gotten in terms of that steel and consistency of performance. And they were just missing something then, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll all go for Kildare here, lads.
Yeah.
Kildare. Yeah. Okay. Other one, Laois Longford. Lads, we're just going to have to stick to predictions here now because I have some hurlers that are waiting on the line and they're dying to start talking about some of the small ball here. Laois Longford. I'm going for a Laois win, lads, but this is probably a toss-up. Conor, I go to you first.
I'm going to go for Longford, Willie. Sorry, but I'm going to go for them this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about supporters when they say, that bollocks tipped the other team against us. Like, I mean, they really take it personally when a pundit tips against their team. I'm not one of those people, Conor. Jared, what do you think?
Well, you have to be objective, Willie. Like, you know, even though it's your own county, you're seeing it with your own.
We have a good record against Longford. Now it is in Pierce Park, which isn't an easy place to go.
Yeah. No. Look, he finished very well the last day, which shows great resolve. Haven't been down with so many points, so Michael Quirk and the players will take confidence from that going into the game. So I think it'll be a close one, Willie. Maybe Laois by a point or two.
Okay, right. Wicklow Mead, lads. Mead will get all they want of it down in Ockram. We know how hard traditionally Ockram is. Well, actually, we've made a joke about how hard it actually isn't some of the times. But anyways, ever since 1986 and the Battle of Ockram, Ockram's a terrible place to go. Mead, it depends again on the weather because Ockram is a boggy, let's be honest, the pitch is not a great pitch during the winter. It's very, very boggy and it's very wet. And like, I mean, if that is a bad day with a wind and Wicklow play a direct brand of football, Ger, Meath could probably get all they want of it down there.
No, they will, and they'll have nothing to lose. Wicklow getting up out of Division 4, winning last weekend against Wexford and having to go down to Wexford Park 2 weeks in a row between the last league game to get promotion. And then obviously the Championship. So David Bourke is obviously doing a very good job with the Wicklow players there. They'll have
what are you going? Who are you going? For, who are you going for here?
Oh, it has to go for me. Division One has to go for me.
Division One versus Division Four. Pat Spillane, right? I'm going to go for Meade, but I'm not. There's not going to be too much in this. Connor, quickly.
Yeah, Meade for me.
All right. Okay. Limerick Tipperary, lads. I think Tipperary will probably beat Limerick. Probably have too much for them, even though Limerick are going really well. A little bit like Wicklow. This is in the Gaelic grounds. Two teams who probably used to have a no crowd watching them when it comes to the big balls. So I don't think that'll be too much of an issue for either of them. This is on RT News now. In a word, Ger, Tipperary, Limerick.
I'm going to chance Limerick by a point.
All right. Very good, Connor.
Tip for me.
Tip for you, Cavan Antrim. I think this it will be a Cavan win. It's in, they're at home. This is in BBC Northern Ireland, but it's clashing with Mayo and Roscommon. So you'd imagine nobody outside of Cavan and Antrim will be watching this match. I'd say Cavan are going to win this one, lads. They were impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chair.
Cavan for me.
Connor.
Yeah, they got the big mow from last week. So yeah, Cavan for me.
Yeah. Fermanagh down then is the other one. This is in Brewster Park in Fermanagh. You know, like, I mean, a difficult place for Down to go. I think this one is a toss-up as well. Fermanagh, you know, preparations have been disrupted. Don't know too much about Down because they had the handiest finish to a league that you'll ever see. They got a walkover against Leitrim and then sent half a team to Loud and got beaten. So it's hard to know where they're at. This is a toss-up for me. I'm going to say a draw after extra time and Down to win on penalties.
I think it's going to be very, very close. Two similarly matched teams. The only positive for me would be Down having gotten promotion. They'd be on a bit of a buzz. And I think Royce McMahon will probably try to harness the small county, everyone's against us type mentality to try and motivate the lads. So it'll get them close, but I think Down will win.
Okay, Connor.
I'm going to go for Fermanagh at home, Willie.
Fermanagh at home. Okay, well, there you have it, lads. Right, we'll let you go. Great stuff today, and we'll be back on Monday. We'll review all the weekend's football. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.